Before starting with the teaching, let us remember the refuge, Buddha, awakening, Dharma, the understanding that liberates, and Sangha, the community of those who help us to become free. I would like to give you a little orientation about what Mahamudra is, a little further orientation. Mahamudra as such has been heard of from about the second century after Christ, yeah? This is the time where the first time someone taught publicly. This is the Mahasiddha Saraha, who is called like the grandfather of the Mahamudra tradition. And at that time also lived that famous Nagarjuna, of which you probably have heard. Now, both these great masters, they belong to that you'd say that group of approaches which has received the name of Mahayana, so this great vehicle. And the origins of that can be traced back to just after the Buddha's Nirvana, the Parinirvana, his leaving the body. At that time there were 18 schools of Dharma, 18 schools of slightly different interpretations of, you know, emphasis on how to pass on the teaching. They were spread out over large parts of India. And the emphasis of this Mahayana is one to make it accessible for lay people. This is one of the great emphasis, not so much originally a monastic tradition. It has turned very monastic afterwards. But originally it was meant to be a tradition for householders, people with family. And called the great vehicle because their attempt was to include all situations into the path. And all situations means to make all of samsara, all of the world of, you know, the challenges with a lot of suffering, to use all these situations of samsara as a means for realization. So that is quite a courageous attempt. It was a little bit different than the attempt to get quickly out of samsara. It's a little different motivation. And it has a lot of consequences. The key teaching of this approach is that samsara is not a world, but it's only a perspective of the world. It is a way to see the world. Samsara is not this world of ours, but it's actually the way we live this world. If we perceive this world always from an seeming I, a seeming self, as the center of the experience and the rest separated from it, then it is samsara. Okay, then it is actually going to create a lot of tensions, a lot of conflicts. All the afflictions, all the klesha, they arise from that, from this basic ignorance of thinking there is a me in the center of the experience. And when the meditator, the yogini and the yogi, when they turn their mind inwards and they try to find that seeming center, which relatively speaking we all use the words I and you, yeah, we all use that, but when we try to find that, just dynamic experience, openness, no center to be found. And the Mahayana approach is using this experience, which you know very well from your Vipassana teaching as the experience of anatta, no self, no solid self, then they use this in all situations of life. So in the Mahayana approach, because it's a household or family approach, for example, sexuality would not be banned. It's not something to avoid, but go into it as practice. Make it a practice for the yogi and the yogini while you come close, while you live that intensity of the experience, to then look into the seeming center, to dissolve the seeming center. And that has given rise to all the tantric approaches, to which also Mahamudra belongs. I will talk more about that later. But actually, this means that in the whole of Mahayana, then this no-self discovery becomes the central issue, and it is called the empty nature, shunyata, shunya. Yeah, this is the key term for the whole development of that which is called the great vehicle. And basically it means that instead of avoiding dualistic thinking, including avoiding the dualistic emotions like desire, hatred, pride, and so on, to become free of them, again and again, one looks into the very nature of that which is arising. And we call that the emptiness of all phenomena. This means that all experience at that moment is not samsara anymore, but becomes an experience of liberation. Because at that moment of seeing the very nature of the experience, of course, the clinging collapses, there is no more dualism, no more subject-object. And whichever situation we are free in, whatever the actual situation is now, this is then an experience of awakening, of liberation. So no more samsara to get rid of, just to see through samsara. This is the difference. If you want to bring it down to a point, the current approach until then and the dominant approach was to be liberated from samsara. And the Mahayana approach is to be liberated in samsara. You know, to see through the illusion, the projection of self and other. And this includes more than just to see through that there is no self in the person. It means that every situation we live in is experienced in this centerless awareness, this awareness without any clinging to a seeming self, which is an enormous challenge, because the most difficult situation to maintain, to reconnect to that realization is when we are challenged by other people, when we're in a communication situation. That's when we slide back easily, especially when there is hatred, especially when there's desire, especially, you know, all kinds of strong emotions, including fear. This is where we tend to get involved with the old patterns, with the old ways. We call them the habitual tendencies, the old ways of dealing with the world and seeing the world. And the practitioner tends to slip back into a what we would call a solidifying attitude, to think that that which is there truly exists, that there are objects which are not mind, that there is whatever I experience, that this world is like that. So even the tendency to think that the world is bad, or that someone is bad, this whole belief comes from solidifying a seeming outside world. And the Mahayana, its strong point, is that it always brings back the practitioner to seeing that, hey, if you live in samsara, that's the samsara you project. There is no outer samsara. The samsara is the world of dualistic perception, which only this mind stream can produce. No one else can make us live in samsara. No one else. They can be in anger, hatred, fear, desire, delusion. The world around us can be on fire. And in here, the person experiencing it, the mind stream, to say it more properly, the mind stream experiencing that, can be free of that. Does not have to be affected by that, but it's difficult. Huh? Yeah, it's very difficult not to panic when everybody around panics. It's difficult when everyone around has a certain belief system not to enter that belief system. So we are talking about a very challenging path, and the motivation to take that path is to say, to feel, as much as not to say, it's to feel that what good is my liberation if my brothers and sisters around me are not liberated. So I want to realize such an awakening that I'm able to deal with the situations, the challenging situations presented by people caught in their emotions around me. And to help them to realize their own nature so that they also awaken. Now we end up with a kind of, you can say, funny situation if you want. We have this bodhisattva ideal of making this awakening available to everybody, and there is the necessary understanding for the bodhisattva that there's no one liberating anyone. Otherwise, there is no awakening. This illusion of someone doing something for the benefit of others has crumbled. There is just this sensitive mind stream in a spontaneous interaction with all situations and not solidifying the one in front as well. That mind stream, that is the so-called samsaric sentient being, is also simply, you can say, a clinging. There is a grasping. So in the energy field that we call a sentient being, there is so much grasping that in this energy field there is a lot of tension. And this is why we say that the bodhisattva activity is no one liberating anyone for as long as samsara lasts, which means to be present with all situations without limit, but without the idea of a personal enterprise, me, the savior of the world. This is completely contradictory to the understanding. This is a misunderstanding. There's no one who can say, okay, sleeves up, here we go. Let's rescue the world. Samsara cannot be cleaned up. You know, no one can rescue anybody. It is more like bodhisattvas, so such people with this inspiration to actually do something for all the other mind streams, The bodhisattvas and the bodhisattvis, that would be the feminine form, the bodhisattvis, they open up to their own mind's nature and they become like catalysts. You know what in chemistry a catalyst is? I give you a little reminder. Vitamins, most vitamins are catalysts, okay? They are present in chemical reactions, and because they are present, the biochemical reaction can take place. But they are not used up in that reaction. They are just present. They create, you can say, the necessary environment for a reaction to take place. That's what is called a catalyst. Now, a bodhisattva or bodhisattva is not actually doing so much. There can be actions, of course, there can be words being said and concrete actions of help can be, but this is not the point. The point is to be a catalyst for a field of awareness that arises around the practitioner. And around this practitioner, people find it easier to realize their own mind. That is the idea of bodhisattva activity. To be present in this universe, which to some is samsara, and to others is nirvana. But we are talking about the same word. So to help everyone enter the change of perspective. The big change is nothing new for you. You know already from the ego-centered perspective to the non-self. This is the anatta. And then just a little step further from a world where everything seems to be solid and other people seem to be existing to a world where everything is perceived as energies, as currents, mind streams, fields of energy with more or less clinging, with more or less clinging to solidity, and to help everywhere to fluidify the situations, yeah? To be a catalyst, like in the washing machine, you put something in to make your shirt soft. It's a softener. We are fluidifiers. Yes, this is the job. Someone, you know, every practitioner has to do the work themselves. No one can do it for you. It's not possible. If any Buddha had the capacity to liberate others, they would have done it long ago. We would not have to walk the path. But no one can do it for us. So we have to do it. But they patiently sit there with us. They are around. They are available. Their teachings are available. And there is this inspiration, you see. And the job of the practitioner is actually to tune in to that inspiration. That's what we call blessing. To tune in to this field of inspiration which is there when someone truly enters Mahamudra, when someone lives this open experience of being. And then to experience for oneself the change of perspective. Not by the intellect. It's not something one can produce. It's somehow seeing from the belly, I would say. You know, it's not with the intellect, you intuitively perceive the world differently, and this is what the Mahamudra approach is about. And so, in those days when the Mahamudra approach was born, as it is actually taking the Mahayana approach to its limits. So in the Mahamudra approach, on purpose, sexuality was included. On purpose, also alcohol was included. Dancing was included. Singing was included. Communication in all forms was included. Political activity was included. You know, there are these Mahasiddhas and Mahasiddhis, the feminine form, which were prostitutes, which were wine sellers, which were maharajas, chiefs of countries, and so on. It's all possible, potoros, and so on. All possible occupations were used for the path. So one of the very important ones, like for example Tilopa, which you might have heard, was the famous teaching of the Ganges Mahamudra, Tilopa teaching Naropa, who then taught Mahapa, who brought it to Tibet. Tilopa was actually the man bringing the man from the marketplace to the brothel, to his companion and her assistants in the prostitute's place. That was Tilopa's main job, you know, and that's where the Mahamudra comes from. I hope you're really desperate now. I'm missing the word, but actually, yes, we come. And then the next one, Naropa, he left his chair of being one of the head professors of Nalanda University and became a complete dropout, you know, a dropout, following this guy Tilopa, you know, who was a nobody. And Mahapa was basically presenting himself as a farmer, what was then becoming the famous Mahapa translator, had the famous disciple of Milarepa, who was running around naked all the time. And, you know, we have beautiful songs by him when he was lying on the side of a footpath, and three beautiful women came along, and they were standing looking at the seemingly sleeping yogi and said, "Oh, what a pity, he doesn't even have anything to dress, you know. Oh, he should be ashamed to be lying around like this." And Milarepa rises, shows himself in all his beauty and says, "I'm not ashamed of everything. Why are you wearing clothes? What is your problem? Are you trying to hide up something with which you were born? What is your problem, actually? Isn't it more proper to be ashamed of one's hatred, of one's pride, one's arrogance?" And he gives them this whole song, you know, about what is truly to be ashamed of and not the naked body, right? So this is Mahamudra. So I'm including all the situations. And we have, it's the whole panoply, we would say, the whole panorama of human situations is included in that. All the sufferings. One of my favorite teachers is Majik Labdran, who lived at that time. She is the founder of the children's tradition, a Tibetan lady who mostly walked around naked most of her life and was the teacher of many, many yogis and yoginis, tens of thousands of them in those days, in the 12th century. Yes. And so we come from quite an outrageous tradition. And this is because Mahamudra takes it really seriously, this point, that samsara and nirvana are different perspectives of the same world. One is the prison perspective, the non-liberated perspective. This is called samsara, where it's always me in the center, me so important, and the others. And then my relation with the rest of the world, always in terms of dualistic clinging and aversion. And that is the nirvana perspective, happening in the same place. And it can happen in the same mind stream. The same mind stream can be in one situation in samsara, and then the next find back into this open way of being. And that's called nirvana, that's called peace. So nirvana is not something to be attained somewhere else, but it is in the here and now. It doesn't wait for after death, it is here and now. And actually, it is, then you might say, "Well, wow, what a development of the Dharma." No, no. Actually, the claim of Mahamudra is that this is how the Buddha was able to teach 45 years. Whatever situation he encountered, he was in this non-clinging mode. He was never losing this awareness of just how it is. So it is basically doing what the Buddha did and serving people, serving all kinds of situations and not putting an end to this by saying, no, I will never come back there. For me, samsara is finished. Hopefully samsara is finished, then we talk about the art of coming back without being caught up in samsara again. So that is a big learning process. How to enter a womb, how to be born, how to grow up, and to again manifest that realization, that awakening. That's not so easy. But that is behind the obvious activity in this world, there is a long-term perspective that a bodhisattva, is also willing to learn that, how to manifest again and again in this world where there is so much suffering. So I wanted to give you this first overview and then explain to you that there is basically three kinds of Mahamudra approaches. Sutra Mahamudra, Tantra Mahamudra, and Essence Mahamudra. Three terms, good to remember. I will give an explanation for each one. Sutra Mahamudra is the teaching that we will mostly follow here. It is a step-by-step approach where you do practices that build upon each other. It's a gradual path. It's the progressive teaching on how to enter liberation and awakening. And it is called Sutra Mahamudra because it is based on the Mahayana sutras. Like, for example, the Samadhi Raja Sutra or the Lankavatara Sutra and so on. You know, there are Mahayana sutras which teach this basic approach. And, you know the Small Heart Sutra, which is one of the starting points for that, and then the other Pranayaparamita Sutra. So all of that is forming the basis for this approach. And then, so what you need to note, maybe it's for those taking notes, Sutra Mahamudra means a gradual approach to Mahamudra based on the sutras. Then we have Tantra Mahamudra, which is based on the tantras. Now, in the tantras, the Buddha manifested in form of bodies of light, different bodies of light, as the medicine Buddha, or as Yidams like Vajrayogini and Chakrasamvara, and. There's lots of different manifestations. And in these visions received by practitioners of the Mahamudra, then these meditation Buddhas were talking to the practitioner. And this was such an overwhelming experience. They were talking, they were showing the path, that the practitioners themselves, usually in that experience, they experience an awakening. They experienced a completely liberating experience which changed their life, and they passed on, they talked about this experience to others. And then the vision of the original tantric vision, which was like meeting the Buddha in person, but in the form of light, then this became what are the tantric visualizations. So if we visualize nowadays a Tara or a Chenrezig Avalokiteshvara or Manjushri and so on, this all goes back to visions, original visions, which were then communicated. And the idea is to enter into this world of perceiving reality differently. Yeah, this is entering, you can say, a nirvanic perspective of life. The tantric perspective has a little gradual approach, but basically it is an affirmation of each one of us having Buddha nature. That you have Buddha nature. If you have a little trust and you don't know how to do it, visualize yourself as Tara, and you will come closer to who you really are. Yeah, this is kind of the You receive a practice, a tantric practice, where you visualize yourself as an awakened Buddha, and you work with that to enhance that trust, that confidence in your own Buddha nature. So it is supposed to be a very quick path because of always using this self-image, which is a non-self, actually. Yeah, we are connecting to ourselves as being an awakened presence, and we have the possibility to do this with different visualizations, mantras. We are learning to perform activities. Tantras are very much about activity. Okay, that's the tantric approach. This tantra Mahamudra is practicing Mahamudra with the help of these tantras, which were also written down and became the Buddhist tantric collection, the collection of tantras. So this we are not using here in the retreat. Okay, this is, I've spent a lot of my life with that, practicing that, and I'm teaching that in other circumstances, but this is not the point here. But we will have times where we, like I already did, it comes spontaneously, it just happens, where we share something like essence Mahamudra. Now, essence Mahamudra, this is absolutely not gradual. It's the instantaneous approach. In the essence Mahamudra, awakening is not to be reached. It is here. It is from the now perspective. It is where the nature of reality is communicated as it is now. And either you get it or you don't get it. Yeah, it's, we say in Tibetan, either it's marikpa, ignorance, or it's rikpa, it's awareness, non-dual awareness. Yeah, it's like, this is essence Mahamudra. It's also the same as Mahaati, which is the highest doctrine teaching. So we're talking about that. And in essence Mahamudra, there is no path to go. We are not talking about different levels, different yogas, and step by step and so on. We only talk about now. How is awareness? That's all. How is it? And if you can get that, then you don't have to do the gradual approach. But since we mostly don't get it, we better do the gradual approach. So that's why the gradual Sutra Mahamudra approach is the one which is most taught. Then, of course, Tibetans, they were all practicing Tantra. You don't find a Tibetan practicing just the Sutra Mahamudra. It's very rare. But this is such a foreign world to us. It resembles the Greek pantheon, you know, when you look at it from the outside. So many deities, and you think, what's going on here? In which world have I ended up? What is happening? Did you ever enter a Tibetan temple? Then you know what I'm talking about. So, gradually, I have entered that world. Yes, I'm very familiar with that, and I understand this world now from within. But the whole idea of all three approaches of Mahamudra is to realize that liberation is now, nowhere else. For the step-by-step, the progressive approach, it's the same. Awakening cannot happen in the future. It's clear, huh? Awakening happens always now. The future is not something that exists. Awakening also cannot be lived in the past. If I was awakened yesterday, does not count today. Only counts whether the awareness is there or not. Past awakenings don't count, future awakenings don't count, and the present awakening is not something you can grasp onto. It's not an object of perception. It is a quality of how perceiving happens. It's the quality of being in the world, not something that can be attained. So it is that very dynamic state of awareness without a center. That is Mahamudra. This dynamic dimension of awareness. with that spacious quality, that dynamic quality, the receptive and the active aspect, all of that. That which made it possible for the Buddha and all the other awakened ones to live in this world and to communicate. That's meant by Mahamudra. It's also called the Great Perfection, Dzogchen. It's another name for that. Okay, so this was to give you a little idea of what could be Mahamudra. And if you ask me, and then Vipassana, how does that relate? Well, that is Vipassana. That is actually what Vipassana, clear seeing, is all about. It is the experience of continuously being in that clear seeing, in the Vipassana experience, the Vipassana realization. To continuously be in that, this is Mahamudra. It's not something new. It's not something new that was that had fallen from the sky or was invented. It's just taking it to its limits. That's all. Taking it so far that it becomes of real use in very challenging situations. Serving all sentient beings. I mean, if you try to serve all sentient beings, you are in trouble. Yes? It's clear. It's not such an easy job. Because wherever there are sentient beings, what do they bring along? What do they bring with them? A great capacity to create trouble. A great capacity for discord. Great capacity for somehow entering kleshas, afflictions. Wow, they are so skilled in that. You know, there's one moment of opening, you don't look, already they have a new klesha. It's so quick. I think it's amazing. And from the enlightened perspective, I'm not enlightened, no, I'm just talking like this. This is from the awakened perspective. You can just see the miracle of creative mind. You know, it's incredible. The creative mind, how fantastically creative it is to always create trouble. Wow, peace would be so easy. It would be so easy. Just a little bit more flexibility and we would all be at peace. Just less self-concern, and we could all share this world. And the animals would even be happy as at the same time. Wow, it could be so easy. Just a little bit less importance to oneself. I'm not talking about an enlightened world, although it sounds like that. No, no, just a little bit less of that. A little bit enlightened, you know, a little bit. Wow. And I understand all religions as attempts to help us get there. That was the original idea. Yes, the original idea was to come to a peace, a freedom of the heart mind. That is the common idea of all great people on this earth. Outside the religions as well, of all those who are really who have gone deeply. So this would be for me the one Dharma approach, to see that what I have taught you about Mahamudra is actually for me that which connects all the different approaches. If it is Allah or Yahweh, or if it is God, or if it is Tao in the Taoist tradition, you know, Brahma in the Advaita tradition, and so on. You name it and you get it. It's always that essence we are talking about. Yeah? And to live in that understanding, this is where this Buddhist path also wishes to take us. Okay. Now, this was a free talk and I have to check the the clock. How much time do I have left? 15 minutes. Well, that sounds good for meditation, right? If you feel an inspiration from what you have heard before, the easiest way to meditate now is to sit in that inspiration and to not even think about it more, just to feel it, to feel the truth that you could understand and to sit with that, to open up to. And to help with that, let us go again with feeling how simple it is to be. Breathing happens by itself. The heart beats by itself. All these physical functions, we don't have to take care of them. And astonishingly enough, the mind is aware by itself. It is its normal function to be aware. And it is open by itself. If there is no movement, narrowing it down, fixing on something, mind is wide open. Always experiencing. Experience of life never stops. Continues by itself. No need to do anything to make the mind any better. It's clear by itself, aware by itself. The next experiences of now arise by themselves. And they liberate by themselves. Allow yourself to open up to that, to relax into it. Just don't follow the normal relaxation process where you fall asleep, but it's relaxing into wakefulness. This is something to learn in Mahamudra, to relax into the awake state.